Testing.
Yeah.
So, welcome to the Unix Accessibility Forum at the KDE World Contributor Conference. We will have three talks today and a full day of other presentations tomorrow. I'm very happy that so many people are willing to participate in this event. Today we will hear three talks. And the first one is given by Arvin Levital from IBM, who used to work at Mozilla before that, and before that he was working at the Braille word processor Matterboard. Just one slight other note, I have programs printed out of the Unix Accessibility Forum. There is a slight printing mistake. The last talk is not starting at 15:30, but at 15 o'clock. So 3 p.m. Yeah. If you wish to catch the program, you can do so. Okay. So now we have our first.
When I originally started developing the material for this talk, it was in a way out of frustration that I'm always in working on projects with a lot of great engineers who know absolutely nothing about accessibility. And the reason that they don't know about accessibility is the schools they went to as a kid didn't have people with disabilities. Accessibility wasn't taught at the colleges they went to. Oftentimes people with disabilities, there's somewhat of a stigma, or perhaps they are not as visible in society, and so people actually think that accessibility is not a problem because it's not in their face. And if the problem is especially, it's a even bigger problem in Linux because there are no users yet. I wouldn't say no users, but there are, compared to Windows, relatively few disabled users running Linux so far. The visibility isn't there. People are not in the chat channels. They're not sending messages to news groups saying, hey, I can't get this from my screen reader. So the visibility is not there, and people think that there's no problem, when in fact it's the exact opposite. So in this talk, I'm going to cover this is basically how I tell engineers what accessibility is, and how to solve accessibility problems, including what do they have to do within their organization? What do you have to do within your organization to get funding or get people to pay attention to it? And finally, what is IBM doing to help the problems in or the issues in Linux and accessibility right now? How many people here would say that they already know what accessibility is? That's actually quite good. I mean, I'd say about 10 people raised their hands. And that's probably about 10% of the audience. So, in fact, I would say of the engineers that I meet, less than 1% people know of what accessibility is. I think of accessibility as I've got a picture of my son here trying to reach a water fountain. It's way too high. I think of accessibility often as a problem where the person who's designing or creating something just didn't think about all the different users. They might have only thought about themselves when they were doing it. Software accessibility is when people with disabilities can use alternative input and output methods with the piece of software, and that's often that often happens by using assistive technologies that work on top of the software that they're using. And in fact, the assistive technology industry has a very rich, interesting history to it, and oftentimes when companies are hiring people to work on accessibility, they just hire somebody internally who doesn't know about the history of accessibility and thus has problems starting to learn about it and get involved in it. There are a number of different groups of people with disabilities that are important to us when we're writing accessible software. You can't just think of a person as disabled or accessibility as a single topic. There are blind and deafblind people who use screen reading software, which is sort of like accessing the information on your screen through a mail slot. You can only access a little bit at a time, so it's a user interface challenge. There are partially sighted users that use font and color contrast combinations and screen magnification software. And dyslexic users use text-to-speech with word highlighting. People with physical disabilities often have difficulty using the keyboard or mouse. And what we have is things like head-mounted devices or eye tracking, which allows the use of an on-screen keyboard. Linux has an excellent on-screen keyboard piece of software that was developed by Sun called Gawk.
Built by the University of Toronto Adaptive Technology Research Center with our assistance.
Okay, with Sun's assistance. But I want to give credit to Sun for getting the work started on Linux accessibility. One-handed typists, and then there are people with ALS or cerebral palsy that may have difficulty holding out or hitting only one key at a time. And they use software that is generally integrated into the desktop, which will help filter out the keys, the unwanted keys. Other disabilities, hearing impaired people cannot rely on sound alone for cues. Colorblind users, this is an important area to consider because 8 to 10% of males are red-green colorblind. They see it all as brown. I'm going to move on to the next area of the slide because I'm going to run out of time on this talk. But the important thing to consider is that there is no one kind of user. When you're designing what your software, you need to consider as many different kinds of users as possible. Don't assume that people will be able to read and react to text and images, to type on a standard keyboard, to point and click, or hear sounds that you play. Don't make too many assumptions when you're designing software. And the thing that's interesting about accessibility is when people do take the time to consider accessibility, the product comes out better. It's more difficult to do, but you often come out with great innovations. For example, the typewriter was invented when there was a blind countess who wanted to type, to write love letters. There are quite a number of things like this. The microphone, the tape recorder, email was developed by somebody at CERN who wanted to send messages back and forth with his deaf wife. Mozilla's Find As You Type, which is like incremental find in Emacs, was developed for disabled users and has now got quite a following among mainstream users. So let's look at what platforms we have to consider when we're dealing with accessibility. For Mozilla, we run on all the different on almost every platform. So we have to think about what are the different assistive technologies on each platform, the strengths and weaknesses. Windows has been the leader in accessibility ever since they had legal difficulties and problems with large customers. So they finally got their act together, and their accessibility support has some issues, but in fact has been gotten around by the third-party vendors, the screen readers vendors have gotten around a lot of the problems, and there are excellent solutions on Windows. The problems are that it's expensive to set up. Typically $700 or so for a Windows accessibility solution to start with. They are it's very difficult for companies to work with Microsoft and some of the proprietary companies that develop this software. Apple is finally getting their act together a little bit. They have something called, I forgot the name, it was called the Spoken Interface, and they're changing it to a VoiceOver now. GNOME is actually doing quite good work through the use of Sun. There are some gaps. There are issues with the screen access. There is difficulty, as within all open source projects, of controlling all of the coders to make them do things that are accessible. And KDE has good keyboard support, and they are starting to actively work on API support as well.
How many years behind would you say they are?
I would say that everyone's quite a few years behind, whether you're GNOME, KDE, or Apple, because of the fact that all the Windows, disabled users are pretty much running Windows, it's hard to get any money for this under open source, and it's hard to get third-party vendors to, I mean, the people with all the expertise right now really are the third-party vendors. They understand the users, and so I think there are so many hills to climb that it's difficult to say a number of years behind. However, on the other hand, free and open source software has potentially very large advantages. For one thing, it would be the ideal world we would get engineers with disabilities actually actively maintaining solutions. It would allow universities and nonprofits and volunteers to contribute, so that money and a business motive does not have to be behind every accessibility solution. That's important because the number of disabled users out there are not always enough to get a business to see them as a large enough market to target. And another nice thing is that vendors have really liked working with Mozilla, for example, because they have access to our bug reports, they have access to us. When you work with Microsoft, for example, you may find that you have given them a bug report and you won't even know if they are going to fix it until you get the next release of their product. So, as I've mentioned before, some of the different assistive technologies that we need to consider. One is themes and screen magnification. I'm going to give a demonstration of Zoom text at the end of this talk, so you'll be able to see that. So I'm not going to concentrate on that right at the moment. Text-to-speech and braille displays is another important assistive technology. And the thing about screen readers is that they're very intricate pieces of software. They do a lot for the user. The first layer of it is that they echo changes to the screen and focus changes as you move around. Another layer that's important is to allow the user to kind of go outside of the normal operating of the procedure of the program and move around the screen or the document and see what's there. Also to be able to find text, even though that text is not normally within the application's find dialog. And another layer is scripting. And scripting is generally implemented by a screen reader to allow even better access to an application, because it's very difficult for a screen reader to have a general rules for every application that it's going to run to always say the right thing. An example of this is if you move down in a buddy list, on the bottom of the screen or somewhere on the screen it may indicate, or even perhaps in a tooltip, it may indicate that this buddy is away or active or has some other state, but that is not part of the focus change. So it's important to be able to have scripting for this particular application so that the right thing gets spoken as the user arrows through the list, so that they are not trying to talk to buddies in their instant messenger that are not currently active. Another important kind of assistive technology is, well, there's really a whole group here, input aids that utilize the keyboard API. For example, Gawk uses this, the on-screen keyboard solutions, push keys, mouse gestures, sticky keys. There are a whole variety of different programs that utilize the keyboard API, so it's important to use the standard keyboard API on an operating system when you're writing an application. Voice input is an area that does not get a lot of attention. The people who typically use voice input also use on-screen keyboards, so there is not as much push to getting that working as there is, for example, a screen reader. They're not this kind of group of users is not as politically active, unfortunately. And another important area is video access, which is not something I typically deal with myself, but it's important to mention closed captioning and audio description. The next part of my talk is where I get to ask you guys the questions. This is my accessibility challenge. I have a picture of a user interface on the screen. It's a very simple dialogue. It says connecting, and then there's a picture of a traffic signal. And then it says OK. Does anybody see any accessibility problems with this screen?
Sure.
What's wrong with the picture?
Colors.
Yeah, it uses colors, that's true. So right there you're getting, you know, red, green, and yellow are being used to show the state of the connection. So you can't do that. I'm not sure, but I doubt that there's any alternative text assigned to this. If I see a screen like this, I'm pretty much doubting right away that there's any text equivalent assigned for that picture. So it won't work with the screen reader. And then the OK button has no dotted outline, so it's not clear that there is any focus in this dialogue whatsoever. Okay, now this is an older version of Mozilla Calendar, and I kind of souped it up by putting extra accessibility problems on there. Does anybody see any accessibility problems on this screen? By the way, can everybody hear me if I don't use the microphone?
It's a barely. It's better with the microphone.
Okay. All right, well, Peter, Do you want to mention a few accessibility problems?
Oh gosh, there's so many, it's hard to start. And part of the challenge with this is you don't know what's going on underneath, so you're making guesses.
Right.
You know, one real obvious one is, or one real nasty one is, the flag above Monday, which is, where is that in the focus order, where is that as far as meaning for it. But calendars in general are some of the trickiest things to be accessible.
Right, and we can't always see what all the accessibility problems are. We can't know if somebody thought about a solution for it, but it's like a good code reviewer can look at a page full of code and instantly see, ah, here's a potential problem, here's a potential problem, here's a potential problem. So it's a skill to be able to look at a user interface and instantly know where potential problems may exist. I don't know where my answer page went, so I'll just go through it. So you got to be able to arrow through this grid. You got to be able to do multiple selection. You got to be able to do multiple discontinuous selection, meaning with the keyboard. You got to be able to select different dates with the keyboard, for example, shift arrow, or being able to hit control arrow to move without changing the selection, but then hit shift space to add something to the selection. There are so many things in the tab order that it's kind of an accessibility problem, so you really need to have implemented a key to move by pane, for example, control tab. But the problem is that there's also a tab dialog in the upper left, and control tab typically switches between, at least I realize that on the GNOME desktop, control tab is also used to switch desktops. But assuming you have something implemented for that, for example, control page up, control page down.
Actually, F6.
Is F6 for switching tabs or for switching panes? Right. And then for switching tabs, is it control page up, control page down?
Once you bring focus to the tab, and then you move arrow left and right.
That's right. Okay, so anyway, there are two grids. This user interface is probably too complicated for a novice or an elderly user. So you have to consider that that's kind of on the verge of being an accessibility problem. Most calendars use click and drag. There are check boxes. When you arrow through the list, or through the tree view in the upper right-hand corner, what will be spoken for each of those check boxes? If you just hear check, uncheck, checked, you won't know what those check boxes mean. Okay, so I want to explain to people why your organization should, in fact, address accessibility from a money perspective. For one thing, when you get, I'm going to use California as an example, but Germany is also probably quite a good example, is that when somebody comes to evaluate your computer setup after you lose, for example, your sight or part of an ability, and they see you running open source software, they're going to say, we don't know about this stuff. We don't know how to make this accessible. Even though they may know that it's being worked on, they're going to say, look, we've got to set you up with Windows. That's what works now. That's what everybody's using. So that's one thing that we've got to overcome. Another problem is that even though governments are actively looking for alternative solutions, for example, for security reasons to Microsoft Windows, they're going to run into their accessibility legislation that's coming up in quite a lot of places. Brazil, Europe is going to have strict accessibility guidelines, and Japan as well, and the US government already has them. So what happens when the US government realizes that there's an alternative that's accessible? Well, legally they are not supposed to use an alternative that's not accessible in that case. So it's very difficult and a lot of paperwork for them to get a variance on that. That means that there are hundreds of millions of dollars worth of potential sales at stake. Yeah.
Item number 4, you're saying E is stricter than 508. You're talking about just the web portion, or are you talking about all of their desktop accessibility rules?
I'm not an expert in the EU legislation, but I know that the web stuff, they're going to base it on the W3C WCAG guidelines. And those are very strict guidelines. For example, they say no JavaScript. So doing the work, it's important to try to get the deepest bugs first, the things that that reflect on practically every widget in your desktop. And then you're going to have to account that polished bugs are going to probably take at least half of the time of making your application accessible. Can somebody tell me what time it is right now?
It's 1:25.
Okay. when I've implemented accessibility in the past, this is kind of the breakup of what I've had to deal with. Focus and tabbing issues take up about 20% of the time, because usually the person who wrote the focus code kind of didn't design it, they just sort of splattered it all over the place in the spaghetti code. Keyboard issues, they're everywhere because somebody, whoever implemented the widgets is usually a clicker, sighted type person who's looking just to make it pixel perfect. Theme support. Generally, everybody likes to have hard-coded colors and sizes in their applications to make things look just right. And support for accessibility APIs takes up a huge amount of time. And then finally, testing and polish takes up a lot of time. So does anybody question that the keyboard is something that you have to have working? The keyboard, you have to be able to access every single piece of an application with the keyboard in some way, shape, or manner. And it also has to be convenient. The problem is that Section 508 rules in the US government just say that it has to be somewhat possible, or just has to be possible to do something. It doesn't say it has to be convenient. So as long as it takes, it could take 50 keystrokes to make something to access something. Under keyboard stuff, it doesn't say that.
In general.
There's a general
that's
rule
in the law.
About it.
It's not even the regs, it's the law.
It's supposed to be as easy. Well, okay.
Yes.
I won't argue with you. So now I can say next time there's a bug that comes up, that's, I can say it's
yes.
Got to be as easy.
Which means it might be very difficult. But no more so than for what I'm saying.
Okay. Tabbing and focus. The focus must always be clearly visible. It has to move through all interactive elements in a sensible order, please. It needs to be consistent when going forward and backwards, and it needs to not be lost if the current element under it is destroyed, hidden, disabled, or collapsed. You have to be compatible with operating system themes. Up here on the screen right now, I have an example. Let's see how that came out. You can barely read the word break there. And the reason that is, that often happens when someone hard codes one color for the foreground, or rather, yeah, they hard-coded the color for the background, but not the foreground. So it came out very, very strange. It's best to use the operating system hooks to find out what color to use in different states. Another thing that you have to do, which generally this is going to be assigned to the accessibility geek of the project, is deal with providing context and information about each custom widget, which is not a... Generally, the kind of pluggable widgets that you get with an operating system have already had accessibility built into them. And Sun has done this for the GTK, and Trolltech is, I believe, doing this for Qt. So, but the problem is that people will always need custom widgets because they're always going to have to make their application better than the other application. So you need to be able to say, provide the information of the who, what, where, when, and state of every visible object on the screen. So this is the kind of thing that MSA and ATK and COCO accessibility provide. The I call it the who, the name of the speakable name, it's a string for each object. What is it? Generally there's a list of about 60 different typical things that something might be, for example, a menu item or a list or a button. Where is it located on the screen? This is very important for screen magnification software so that it can track the focus and keep it on the screen. When did different things happen? When did the focus move? When did the state of something change? You got to fire events. And you have to provide the state of the object. This is a set of about 32 different Booleans. True, false, is it focused? Is it disabled? Is it available? Is it hidden? All these different things. So in the ideal world, Peter?
There's also a lot more for different widgets depending upon what they do. That's not the...
That was a gross, right, my slide there was a gross simplification. I'm going to rely on Peter to give the internal details and the internal guts of the rest of it. So the ideal world is that we would be able to write one application and it would work in a car, it would work on a cell phone, it would work for over just voice interface with a telephone, it would work on a watch, it would be accessible. That's the world that people are trying to move to. That's the world that the W3C wants. IBM is helping to push that with standards that get away from HTML, that generally try to separate structure and content from the presentation of that structure. unfortunately, developers don't typically think that way. They typically write applications so that it's so that they're showing it on a certain desktop that looks right for them. So the real world today is that accessibility happens when somebody adapts a desktop interface, and they have to rely quite often on hacks and heuristics to do that. So there are quite a number of problems with the real world. And in order to get around those problems, what you really have to do is you have to have testing. It's a very critical step. And testing really is actually the start of marketing your product. What my goal is for Mozilla this year is to get 5 users only. That's all I care about. I want to get 5 users with disabilities to use Mozilla constantly for all of their web browsing. Then I'm going to, next year, I'm going to get 25 users, then I'm going to get 125, and it's going to keep multiplying by 5 each year. That's really the way that it works, because it's such an arduous process to make something accessible and to work really well. What I want to say about this is mainstream companies often ignore actually having people with disabilities on staff. They often ignore this step because they just see it as an added expense. Now I'm going to talk for just a moment about what IBM is concentrating on. And I'm going to have my colleague George come up in a moment and talk about specific areas of Linux accessibility that we think need to be addressed. IBM is for the most part still concentrating on the GNOME desktop, but we're watching the progress of KDE and Qt to see how the accessibility story moves along. A key area is Mozilla. We see that as an environment, because it's possible to write whole applications using the Mozilla framework, not just in HTML, but in Zoom, and also pure Java. Assistive technologies that we are mainly focusing on are screen readers, text-to-speech engines, screen magnification, and keyboard user interfaces. And on the right, I have a whole list of IBM applications that I'm not going to get into right now. George, would you like to talk about our gap analysis?
So a brief introduction now. My name is George Kraft. I'm in the IBM Emerging Technologies Department, just joined, new to accessibility. For the last 4 years, I was the chairman of the Linux standard base, so I'm shifting over to a whole new technology for myself. And this is a list of IBM requirements, what we were thinking of IBM requirements for accessibility. So the first thing would be accessible desktop widgets, so mostly GTK and Gale on the desktop, you know, watching KDE and Qt. Accessibility themes, we're thinking that the GNOME KDE, using their themes with the high contrast and enlarging and large fonts. The next is the screen reader. Our requirements is that it's fast, stable, scriptable, reader with virtual navigation. And so we're looking at Copernicus, seeing that it's at, would you call that beta here at 0.9? Yeah, 0.9, currently no scripting. Uno, we think, is a little slow in OpenOffice, going through that layer. And Orca, another possibility screen reader, that it's pretty much an experiment.
As you say, Orca's not a screen reader, it's a research experiment.
Research experiment, yeah. I was trying to get into it a little bit more. But it acts like a screen reader, doesn't it? Yeah. So it's so,
but there's politics.
Yeah. So when IBM's looking at it, we're looking at it saying, right now, there are screen readers there, but there's nothing for us to warranty to the customer. You know, go in and sell a server and say, yeah, we warranty this screen reader. So we're hoping things will evolve over time to get there. Next was fast and rich access to HTML. So as Aaron's been talking about, or is Mozilla. Access to JavaScript and DHTML. So we're hoping the W3 Dynamic Web Content Task Force will take care of that. IBM's currently not looking at yet at OCR or voice input command and control. Magnifier, we think that should be built into the X server. On-screen keyboard, I think that GOC is ready for users. Testing tool, so for testing tools currently there's ATPoke, we think that needs some more work, and also in general the whole overall architecture of providing accessibility, we think there needs to be testing suites to be able to automate that, make it easy so we can test all the different distributions if they're providing that capability. And lastly, fast, clear text-to-speech engines supporting many languages. And so our current solution in our mind is providing via voice text-to-speech through Wizard software. So this is our perceived requirements and our solutions right now from an IBM relative point of view.
I have a question. IBM is trying to help itself to be more accessible. What is the exchange between the developers for the IBM homepage reader and the Mozilla developer? Are there some exchange of information or something?
That's just starting to begin right now.
Okay.
It's not clear whether we're going to do a homepage reader versus version of Mozilla, but it's not clear that we're not going to.
Okay.
You mentioned via voice there. Is there an end user version of via voice for Linux planned?
Yes,
What's the question?
The question is, can we get via voice for Linux? And then the answer is that we are still waiting for, I don't know, it's just taking forever. We're sort of actually annoyed with this. But it's going to be available through Wizard software, and it should be available any time now. The answer on the homepage reader, the answer is that we need to have a strategy for a screen reader. We're not satisfied with the current state of affairs, so we're answering that question first before we decide on how we're going to do screen reader access for Mozilla.
Okay. Any plans to open source via voice?
No, we can't because it's licensed on technology from Eloquence.
Could you just repeat questions? Because we're missing.
Yeah, we can't open source. Legally, we can't open source via voice because it's licensed technology. thanks, George. By the way, I'm sorry for being a dork and not introducing you.
That's okay.
Typical geek social skills. Mozilla accessibility, so I can talk about this because I actually am the accessibility module owner for Mozilla, and as well as keyboard user interface and find as you type. But Mozilla accessibility had concentrated on what's called the SeaMonkey browser, which is the typical Mozilla suite that Netscape designed, which is sort of an all-in-one application. And now that Mozilla is moving more towards Firefox, which is a slick, streamlined, just browser application, which is supposed to be faster and nicer, we have looked at it and said, oh no, now we gotta, this is where the industry's moving towards Firefox, it's a nicer program, but now we've got to kind of, once we finally got SeaMonkey, mostly keyboard accessible, now we have to move to Firefox and start the work on that again. So it's kind of a process of making sure that we're not burned out and starting the work up again. So we see Firefox gaining keyboard accessibility after Firefox 1.0, which is coming out this fall. Sometime, probably it'll be called Firefox 1.5. We are going to provide a DHTML accessibility solution for screen reader access as soon as we can. It'll probably first be available on Windows with WindowEyes. Right now, a lot of web pages use DHTML to make menus using mouse overs, or they have tree views, tab widgets. There are all sorts of things that web pages need to be able to do, which are just basic common widgets on a desktop, and HTML doesn't have them. And then you add on top of that the really crazy things like calendars and other applications that people do with HTML. Some sort of solution needs to be able to be devised. There's never going to be a version of HTML that solves every problem. People are always going to use DHTML to write custom widgets. So we need to basically add, which is the equivalent of ATK or MSA, an accessibility way of adding accessibility information to generic divs and spans. We're going were going to use that to spearhead or to drive the European Union to adopt sensible JavaScript standards, so that they can't just say no JavaScript whatsoever. We're going to say here, you can make JavaScript accessible, so you need to allow it legally. So new formats that will be coming out in the next year will be Zool 2.0, XForms will be coming into Mozilla, and WebForms, which is a group that has split off. It's the three smallest browser vendors: Safari, which is KHTML, really. Mozilla and Opera have joined together to. It's not officially supported by companies; it's supported by individuals. But it's an idea is that that we can extend HTML, and we can extend the life of it if all we do is solve some common sense problems like adding date pickers, and dealing with kind of the missing widgets that HTML does not have. And it's going to be backwards compatible and work on older browsers as well as Internet Explorer. We're concentrating on Zoom Text screen magnification and Window Eye screen reader, and we still do not have a Linux screen reader strategy. That's under development. So I just talked about the future of DHTML. What we're doing is two steps. There's actually more than two steps, but the main two steps is to make it so that you can make any HTML element focusable, which is we're really just supporting what IE already does, which is that you can use the tab index attribute on any element. If you put tab index equals 0, it's part of the normal tab order, and if you put tab index equals positive, your positive number, then you're specifying where in the tab order it is. And if you put a negative tab index, you're making something focusable but not in the tab order. And then we're also going to be adding attributes to that you'll be able to use in HTML to specify the meta information that's important that you would normally provide in MSAA or ATK. For example, this is a list or a list item. So if you are implementing a grid in DHTML, you could put this is a grid with the role attribute, and you could say whether it was currently disabled or currently active, selected, all these other different states. So I want to sum up by saying, what are some of the motivations for working on? Oh, question. Oh, I have 15 minutes. Five. Okay. What are some motivations that people have for working on accessibility? The main one I want to concentrate on. There are so many different reasons. Other, legal. There's pride, professional design, and there are all sorts of ethical questions. But the one that really gets companies to pay attention is that there are hundreds of millions of dollars worth of sales in government that are at stake here. This is, and for hackers, this is the way that we can displace Microsoft use in government by making things accessible. You're finished with accessibility. You know you're finished when, instead of a negative feedback loop where your developers don't know that there is such a thing as accessibility because there are no users, you get a positive feedback loop. The users with disabilities are active in the project, they give feedback, and they create awareness, and the awareness causes improvements, which makes even more users come to your project. I would also like to put in a plug for attending accessibility conferences, like CSUN or ATIA, and there's also one in Germany, REHA, I'm not sure how that, what is pronounced, REHA?
REHA, yes.
REHA. It's important to go to one of these conferences so you get a real big a picture of the accessibility world and industry. So I'm going to end this, and I've got only a couple minutes left, so I'm going to just quickly run a program called Zoom Text, and that's my excuse for using Windows for this presentation.
Ooh.
Well, but the thing is that this program really kicks butt. This is my favorite assistive technology tool in the entire industry. I love this company. They're really friendly and easy to work with. Well, there are not really companies that are looking to Linux to make a profit. So when you realize that there are not that many blind and visually impaired people in the world, and this company basically has to sell their product for $800 in order to make a profit. That's typically how much a solution for people with blind and visually impaired people has, so that they can stay afloat. And I'm not sure that model will work under Linux. Okay. Hopefully I don't have any too much embarrassing on here. This is just my to-do list. Okay, so Zoom Text lets you zoom around the screen. There are a lot of different tracking modes. As you tab to items, it always keeps the focus on the screen. If you type, it always keeps the character selection on the screen. And another thing that Zoom Text does, right now I've got it on 1.7 power magnification. Another nice thing about Zoom Text is it does great font smoothing. You can change, you can have it tell you. Oh, cool, I've got that on. If I hold down Control, it'll show me where the mouse pointer is. If I type, it'll show me where the caret is. There are many different modes for showing the way that something is, but typically an evaluation specialist will set the program up for you. I'm going to use reverse video mode. There are a lot of different color modes. You can't assume that somebody who has problems with colors will need any particular kind of contrast. Some people need high contrast, some users need low contrast if they're light sensitive. So they might use blue-green color scheme. And then here's a really great feature of this program. It's called the Doc Reader. What the Doc Reader does is it will read things out loud. The Doc Reader will read things out loud and highlight each word as it speaks, and it also shows it in a ticker on the screen and scrolls only from right to left, so it's easy to follow if you're... and it uses whatever power magnification that you would like. This is actually the only mode that Zoom Text has where it needs it needs to read in the entire web page through your object model. Another thing that it has is called the App Reader, which is basically the same mode, but it shows it in the context of the screen that you're using. There are probably another 30 features that I could use show you on Zoom Text, but most users will probably typically only use about 5 of them. I just wanted to give you guys an impression that it's got some very powerful features. It's that screen magnification is not just a matter of zooming around the screen. Does anybody have any questions that they want to ask? How many minutes do we have? Oh, we have 10 minutes for questions. Okay.
Yes. So how long will you be around to show more of the Zoom Text and all these kind of features that you've been talking about?
I'm around for today and tomorrow if anybody would like to get demos of anything I can show you. I also have Mozilla working with Windows Screen Reader now. But we are still, in fact, I would like to put in a plug for, we're looking for testers. This is probably the wrong crowd. There are probably not too many Windows users here, but... Actually, no, I would be surprised if the visually impaired people in this audience probably mostly have a Windows machine as well. There's no OCR under Linux, right?
Yes, there is. The open source OCR is not particularly good, but there is.
Well, that's kind of what I meant. Like, I mean, the solution has to be good, you know?
Yeah. Finally, that's a good solution.
Well, there is
a
good
solution. Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
Zoom Text, what is it required when it's from the applications right now? I mean, how much code is that? Are those features available with most of the applications?
Well, Zoom Text does what a lot of applications do, which is get around the fact that, what a lot of screen readers do, which is get around the fact that most applications couldn't care less about accessibility and don't do anything for it. So, both screen readers and Zoom Text look for screen draws to know where things are happening. So if you're typing, they actually look for a continually blinking screen draw of a vertical line to know where the caret is. However, when it comes to navigating between links in Mozilla, I found that it needed to get the focus events, the MSAA focus events, and then it used the location, which is called getAcLocation, from iAccessible to get the location and make sure that the thing is on the screen. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so in other words, it...
So in other words, it is like eyes, it watches the frame buffer and tries to...
What's great about it is it actually replaces it. So does screen readers do this as well? It actually replaces the display driver in your system and passes it through, the information through to the next display driver. So there's something on Windows that I don't believe Linux had, which is called display chain management.
Yeah.
And so the problem, there would be a problem if ZoomText got, if you're running ZoomText and a screen reader, it would be a problem if ZoomText got the information and then sent it onto the screen reader, because as you can see, ZoomText is modifying things before it sends to the next display driver. So this system enforces the fact that the screen reader must come first, then the screen magnifier, and then the real display driver on the system.
What is your take on a technology like that? Do you think it's a dead end and we need to get more support in the toolkits, do that through proper APIs? Is it just a crutch, or do you think this is actually a way to go if you add some help through some APIs for what it's required?
I think we need to implement, use APIs on Linux. I think that the hacks are the wrong way to go. And as Peter often says, we can draw a line in the sand. We can do things cleanly in the future. I think Peter wants to probably say something about that as well.
I can also, it's very illustrative that the route that MSAA tried to do going API based, and that Sun did in Java, and the open source community has done in GNOME and is doing in KDE, is exactly the approach that Apple is taking in OS 10.4, and is exactly the approach that Microsoft is finally coming to in Longhorn. So pretty much the entire industry has recognized, sort of belatedly, that the right answer is to be API based.
Well, and there's going to be a problem with that solution on Longhorn, because for one thing, it's running in managed code, and there's going to be a performance hit because these screen readers are not running in managed code. Another thing is that on Windows, you don't have, I mean, under Linux, we have access to almost all the application source code. So if there's an issue and somebody didn't remember to pay attention to accessibility, we can go in there and fix it. Apple can fix it because they pretty much write all the applications for there. But on Windows, there are so many companies that don't know about accessibility that if they enforce the use of APIs and don't let the system technologies use their hacks, then Windows accessibility is going to go south rather quickly.
One of the things that, Aaron, you didn't touch on that I think is very key in moving to an API-based approach is the strategy of doing as much as you can in the toolkits so that an application vendor need only do significant accessibility work in their app when they move away from the stock widget libraries. And so the more and more rich libraries support accessibility, the less and less work there will be for individual app developers, because they're a lot less likely to use custom widgets.
That's true, but I would like to point out that basically companies running desktop software, almost, unless they're really big and they sell to the government, they almost never do the stuff for the custom widgets. And they all are using custom widgets in their applications. I mean, there's no rich application that doesn't use some custom widgets. So they might be fooled into thinking that they're getting stuff for free, and then really their application is only 90% accessible, and thus it's not really accessible at all. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Oh, wait, one more question.
So you said you wanted to get in people for testing. You want to start off with 5, right? So they will...
I'll take as many as I can get, but my goal is at least 5.
All right, so you want to get them in and have them available for testing 24/7? Or is it just they would have to be responsible for at email and have somebody help them install the programs?
No, I mean, some people will get involved and then they'll drop off when they're not interested. But what I want is that people who get involved in Mozilla testing enjoy it. I mean, I just want them to get into the project, and I think it's going to take off on its own. I'm not worried about people not giving me back enough. I think once people start using the product, they're going to get addicted to sending in feedback that actually impacts the program, that somebody actually pays attention to.
So you would need more PR on this to get people in for testing.
Yeah, and I'm not too worried about that. We're going to send out to various lists, the WindowEyes user list, you know, the GNOME accessibility, well, probably not that yet, but Mozilla accessibility list, etc.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I think we still have time for two more questions, if there are any. Okay, then.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation.